then of the claw, the mighty relic chance had dropped into my hands. I felt very glad when Jolenta began to stir, and at last rose and stretched her lush limbs against the scarlet-shot sky. "Is there water?" she asked. "I want to wash." I told her that I thought Baldanders had carried the water for our supper from the direction of the copse, and she nodded and went off to look for a stream. Her appearance, at least, distracted my thoughts. I found myself glancing from her retreating figure to Dorcas's prone one. Jolenta's beauty was perfect. No other woman I have ever seen could approach it. Thecla's towering stateliness made her seem coarse and mannish in comparison. Dorcas's blonde delicacy as meager and childlike as Valeria, the forgotten girl I had encountered in the atrium of time. Yet I was not attracted to Jolenta as I had been to Aegia. I did not love her as I had loved Thecla, and I did not desire the intimacy of thought and feeling that had sprung up between Dorcas and me, or think it possible. Like every man who ever saw her, I desired her, but I wanted her as one wants a woman in a painting. And even while I admired her, I could not help but notice, as I had on the stage the night before, how clumsily she walked, she who appeared so graceful in repose. Those round thighs chafed one another. That admirable flesh weighed her until she carried her voluptuousness as another woman would have carried a child in her belly. When she returned from the copse with drops of clear water shining in her lashes, and her face as pure and perfect as the curve of the rainbow, I felt still almost as though I were alone. "I said there's fruit if you want it. The doctor had me save some last night so we'd have something for breakfast." Her voice was husky and slightly breathless. One listened as if to music. "I'm sorry," I told her. "I was thinking. Yes, I'd like some fruit. That's very kind of you."
"I won't get it for you. You'll have to fetch it yourself. It's there behind that stand of armor."
The armor to which she pointed was actually of cloth stretched over a wire frame and painted silver. Behind it, I found an old basket containing grapes, an apple, and a pomegranate.
"I'd like something, too," Jolenta said. "Those grapes, I think."
I gave her the grapes, and considering that Dorcas would probably prefer the apple, put it near her hand and took the pomegranate for myself. Jolenta held up her grapes.
"Grown under glass by some exultant gardener. It's too soon for natural ones. I don't think this strolling life's going to be too bad. And I get a third of the money."
I asked if she had not trooped with the doctor and his giant before.
"You don't remember me, do you?" "I didn't think so."
She popped a grape into her mouth and, so far as I could see, swallowed it whole.
"No, I haven't. I did have a rehearsal, although with that girl thrust into the story so suddenly, we had to change everything."
"I must have disturbed things more than she did. She was on stage, much less."
"Yes, but you were supposed to be there. Dr. Talos took your roles when we practiced as well as his own and told me what you were supposed to say."
"He depended on my meeting him, then." The doctor himself sat up at that, almost with a snap. He looked wide awake.
"Of course, of course. We told you where we'd be when we were at breakfast, and if you hadn't appeared last night, we would have presented great scenes from and waited another day. Jolenta, you won't be getting a third of the receipts now, but a quarter. It's only fair that we share with the other woman."
Jolenta shrugged and swallowed another grape.
"Wake her now, Severian. We should be going. I'll rouse Baldanders, and we can divide the money and pack."
"I won't be going with you," I said. Dr. Talos looked at me quizzically. "I have to return to the city. I have business with the Order of Pelerines."
"You can remain with us until we reach the main road, then. It will be your most expeditious route back."
Perhaps because he refrained from questioning me, I felt he knew more than what he had said indicated. Ignoring our talk, Jolenta smothered a yawn.
"I'll have to have more sleep before tonight, or my eyes won't look as good as they should."
I said, "I will, but when we reach the road, I must go." Dr. Talos had already turned away to wake the giant, shaking him and striking his shoulders with his slender cane.
"As you wish," he said,
and I could not be sure whether he was addressing Jolenta or me. I stroked Dorcas's forehead and whispered that we would have to move on now.
"I wish you hadn't done that. I was having the most wonderful dream. Very detailed, very real."
So was I. Before I woke, I mean.
You've been awake a long time, then? Is this apple mine?
All the breakfast you'll get, I'm afraid.
All I need. Look at it. How round it is, how red. What is it they say? Red as the apples of... I can't think of it. Would you like a bite?
I've eaten already. I had a pomegranate.
I should have known from the stains on your mouth. I thought you'd been sucking blood all night.
I must have looked shocked when she said this, because she added,
Well, you did look like a black bat bending over me.
Baldanders was sitting up now, rubbing his eyes with his hands like an unhappy child. Dorcas called across the fire,
Terrible to have to rise so early, isn't it, Goodman? Were you dreaming, too?
No dreams, Baldanders answered. I never dream.
Dr. Talos looked toward me and shook his head as if to say, Most unhealthy.
I'll give you some of mine, then. Severian says he has plenty of his own.
Though he seemed thoroughly awake, Baldanders stared at her.
Who are you?
I'm...
Dorcas turned toward me, frightened. Dorcas, I said.
Yes, Dorcas. Don't you remember? We met behind the curtain last night. Your friend introduced us and said I shouldn't be afraid of you because you would only pretend to hurt people in the show. I said I understood because Severian does terrible things but is really so kind.
Dorcas looked to me again.
You remember Severian, don't you?
Of course. I don't think you have to be anxious about Baldanders just because he's forgotten. He's big, I know, but his size is like my Fullerton clothes. It makes him look much worse than he is. Baldanders told Dorcas,
You have a wonderful memory. I wish I could recall everything like that.
His voice was like the rolling of heavy stones. While we were talking, Dr. Talos had produced the money box. He jingled it now to interrupt us.
Come, friends, I have promised you a fair and equitable distribution of the proceeds of our performance, and when that is complete, it will be time to be moving. Turn around, Baldanders, and spread your hands in your lap. Sir Severian, ladies, will you gather around me as well?
I had observed, of course, that when the doctor spoke earlier of dividing the contributions he had collected the night before, he had specified a division into four parts, but I had assumed it was Baldanders, who seemed to be his slave, who would receive nothing. Now, however, after rummaging in the box, Dr. Talos dropped a shining asimi into the giant's hands, gave another to me, a third to Dorcas, and a fistful of orichalks to Jolenta. Then he began to distribute orichalks singly.
You will notice that everything thus far is good money, he said. I regret to report that there are a fair number of dubious coins here as well. When the undoubted specie is exhausted, you will each come in for a share of them.
Jolenta asked,
Have you already taken yours, Doctor? I think the rest of us ought to have been present.
For a moment, Dr. Talos's hands, which had been darting from one of us to another as he counted out the coins, paused.
I take no share from this, he said.
Dorcas glanced toward me as if to confirm her judgment and whispered,
That doesn't seem fair.
I said,
It isn't fair. Doctor, you took as large a part in the show last night as any of us, and collected the money. And from what I have seen, you provided the stage and scenery as well. If anything, you should have a double share.
I take nothing, Dr. Talos said slowly. It was the first time I had seen him abashed.
It is my pleasure to direct what I may now call the company. I wrote the play we perform, and like...
He looked around as if at a loss for a simile.
That armor there, I play my part. These things are my pleasure, and all the reward I require. Now, friends, you will have observed that we are reduced to single orichalks, and there are not enough to make the circle again. To be specific, only two are left. Whoever wishes may have both by renouncing claim to the A's and doubtful stuff remaining. Severian, Jolenta.
Somewhat to my surprise, Dorcas announced,
I'll take them.
Very good. I will not presume to judge among the rest, but simply hand it out. I warn you who receive it to be careful in passing it. There are penalties for such things, though outside the wall.
What's this? I followed the direction of his eyes and saw a man in shabby gray advancing toward us. Chapter 35. Hethor. I do not know why it should be humiliating to receive a stranger while sitting on the ground, but it is so. Both the women stood as the gray figure approached, and so did I. Even Baldanders lumbered to his feet, so that by the time the newcomer was within speaking distance, only Dr. Talos, who had reoccupied our one chair, remained seated. Yet a less impressive figure would have been difficult to imagine. He was small of stature, and because his clothes were too large for him, seemed smaller still. His weak chin was covered with stubble. As he approached, he pulled a greasy cap away to show a head on which the hair had retreated at either side to leave a single wavering line like the crest of an old and dirty bergamot. I knew I had seen him elsewhere, but it was a moment before I recognized him.
"Lords," he said, "oh, lords and mistresses of creation, silken-capped, silken-haired women and men commanding empires in the armies of the women of our photosphere. Tower strong, stone is strong as the oak that puts forth leaves new after the fire. And my master, dark master, death's victory, viceroy over the night, long I signed on the silver-sailed ships, the hundred-masted whose masts reached out to touch the stars, I, floating among their shining jibs with the Pleiades burning beyond their top royal spar, but never have I seen aught like you. Hethor am I, come to serve you, to scrape the mud from your cloak, wet the great sword, carry the basket with the eyes of your victims looking up at me. Master, eyes like the dead moons of Vethandi when the sun has gone out. When the sun has gone out, where are they then, the bright players? How long will the torches burn? The freezing hands grope toward them, but the torch bowls are colder than any ice, colder than the moons of Vethandi, colder than the dead eyes. Where is the strength then that beats the lake to foam? Where is the empire where the armies of the sun long-lanced and golden-bannered? Where are the silken-haired women we loved only last night?"
"You are in our audience, I take it," said Dr. Talos. "I can well sympathize with your desire to see the performance again. But we won't be able to oblige you until evening, and by then we hope to be some distance from here."
Hethor, whom I had met outside Aegidlus's prison with the fat man, the hungry-eyed woman, and the others, did not seem to have heard him. He was staring at me with occasional glances toward Baldanders and Dorcas.
"He hurt you, didn't he? Writhing, writhing. I saw you with the blood running red as Pentecost. What honor for you. You serve him too, and your calling is higher than mine."
Dorcas shook her head and turned her face away. The giant only stared. Dr. Talos said,
"Surely you understand that what you saw was a theatrical performance."
I remember thinking that if most of the audience had had a firmer grip on that idea, we would have found ourselves in an embarrassing dilemma when Baldanders jumped from the stage.
I understand more than you think. I, the old captain, the old lieutenant, the old cook in his old kitchen, cooking soup, cooking broth for the dying pets. My master is real, but where are your armies? Real, and where are your empires? Shall false blood run from a true wound? Where is your strength when the blood is gone? Where is the luster of the silken hair? I will catch it in a cup of glass. I, the old captain of the old limping ship, with its crew black against the silver sails of the coal stack behind it.
Perhaps I should say here that at the time I paid little attention to the rush and stumble of Hethor's words, though my ineradicable memory enables me to recreate them on paper now. He spoke a gobbling sing-song with a fine spray of spittle flying through the gaps in his teeth. In his slow way, Baldanders may have understood him. Dorcas, I feel sure, was too repelled by him to hear much of what he said. She turned aside as one turns from the mutterings and cracking bones when an Elzebo savages a carcass, and Jolenta listened to nothing that did not concern herself.
"You can see for yourself that the young woman is unharmed."
Dr. Talos rose and put away his money box.
"It's always a pleasure to speak to someone who has appreciated our performance, but I'm afraid we've work to do. We must pack."
if you'll excuse us. Now that his conversation had become one with Dr. Talos exclusively, Hethor put his cap on again, pulling it down until it nearly covered his eyes.
Stowage? There's no one better for it than I, the old supercargo, the old chandler and steward, the old stevedore. Who else shall put the kernels back on the cob, fit the fledging into the egg again? Who shall fold the solemn winged moth with wings each like stencils into the broken cocoon left hanging like a sarcophagus? And for the love of the master, I'll do it. For the sake of the master, I'll do it. And follow anywhere he goes.
I nodded, not knowing what to say. Just at the moment, Baldanders, who had apparently caught the references to packing if he had caught nothing else, scooped a backdrop from the stage and began to wind it on its pole. Hether vaulted up with unexpected agility to fold the set for the Inquisitor's chamber and reel in the projector wires. Dr. Talos turned to me as if to say, "He's your responsibility, after all, just as Baldanders is mine." "There are a good many of them," I told him. "They find pleasure in pain and want to associate with us just as a normal man might want to be around Dorcas and Jolenta." The doctor nodded.
"I wondered. One can imagine an ideal servant who serves out of pure love for his master, just as one can an ideal rustic who remains a ditcher from a love of nature, or an ideal fricatrice who spreads her legs a dozen times a night from a love of copulation. But one never encounters these fabulous creatures in reality."
In about a watch, we were on the road. Our small theater packed itself quite neatly into a huge barrow formed from parts of the stage, and Baldanders, who wheeled this contraption, also carried a few odds and ends on his back. Dr. Talos, with Dorcas, Jolenta, and me behind him, led the way, and Hethor followed Baldanders at a distance of perhaps 100 paces.
"He's like me," Dorcas said, glancing back. "And the doctor is like Aja, only not as bad.